How should a Christian life be lived? This is Carl Kosar from Walwell University School of Theology, and welcome to Good Word, our weekly radio program that explores biblical and theological topics that are central to our Christian faith. Today we continue in our study of Romans by looking at Romans chapter 12 and chapter 13. And to help us do that, I have my two colleagues again from the School of Theology, Dr. Bruce Johansson and Dr. Strahko Stefanovic, to join me in our conversation. Gentlemen, thank you again for coming.
Good to be back again. Yes.
Well, we are drawing towards the close of Romans, looking at chapter 12 and chapter 13. And in this case, we have some interesting change in the nature of Romans. Paul has been doing lots of theology, even in talking about the relationship between Jews and Gentiles in chapters 9, 10, 11, theology. But here, he talks more about lifestyle. Is this unique also to Romans?
Well, no, it isn't, because you have the same format in Ephesians, you have it in Galatians, you have it in Philippians, Colossians.
Is it a common part of letters in antiquity then?
Paul uses letter conventions. He uses Greco-Roman rhetorical conventions. I think you have a speech convention from the Old Testament here, because you don't find this division in rhetorical and letters.
So this is unique then to the New Testament?
It's probably it's probably not unique to the New Testament, but Paul is using a convention that comes from the Old Testament. Mm. So he's mixed all these conventions into a very rich new literary form. Mm. And the one that marks this change from theology or theory or philosophy to exhortation comes from the Old Testament covenant speeches. The whole of Deuteronomy has this format. You have the first four chapters is a theological, historical treatment of salvation history, and then come all the stipulations afterwards, practical, ethical. And you have it in Joshua's speech also. So this here, and the shift is now we're going to deal with the practical side. We've done the theology. How does the theology play out, or how should it play out in people's lives?
So it's kind of a sense we could say, become what you are.
Become what you are.
He's explained it to us, yes. And now let's put this into real life. Yeah. I think Paul starts off with one of the most famous passages, at least a passage that people memorize, Romans chapter 12, but he says, I appeal to you, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as living sacrifices. So here we go to sacrificial terminology again.
Yes.
Holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your minds. Now, what strikes me here is he's mentioned our body and our mind.
Yes.
Both must be given in sacrifice.
Holistic. And the mind is the mind that is set on the spirit. Mm. He comes back to that.
Can you think of any examples in Christianity or perhaps elsewhere that has focused too much on one of those aspects with disastrous results? Too much on the mind to the neglect of the body, or the neglect of the mind to the body?
Gnostic, enlightenment. You have many, many religions that are based on enlightenment, the mind, special knowledge, gnosis.
Mm-hmm.
You have others who are very preoccupied with ritual cleanliness. I'm not just thinking of Jewish religion.
We could say some says perhaps monasticism is some
monasticism.
Sense that, you know, beats the body.
Or an ascetic practice.
Ascetic practice.
Yeah, there's many of those down there.
So Paul starts off with a balance. It's both body and its mind.
So the whole person.
But then he goes on to give us a number of examples here, and particularly he picks up in verse 9, about letting love be genuine.
Yeah.
And he lists all these qualities, and even the fact he says, abhor what is evil and hold fast to what is good.
Yeah.
So how can we learn to hate evil without hating the evildoer?
Yeah, that's the trick, isn't it?
Similar to loving the sinner and hating sin.
Yeah, I think that's a challenge we face. Separating the two is difficult for us.
They always bleed into each other because of our human nature.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, when you look at this chapter 12, you can say that after that beautiful prolegomena, You have verses 3 to 13, which focus on in-house relationships, members treating members. A lot of good stuff there.
Sometimes that's something we need to be reminded of.
Yeah. We are individually members of one another. You have the very organic body metaphor that you find elsewhere in 1 Corinthians 12. And mutual affection, notice that. There's zeal there too.
It's come back.
It's come back.
All in its good, in its proper place. Yes.
Yeah.
Another thing that could be emphasized based on this passage is that central to the ritual of worship was offering of the sacrifices, both for the Jewish people and the pagans.
True.
And without a proper sacrifice, you know, it would be very difficult to imagine, you know, worship it, you know, and so on. Here the Apostle Paul is saying that we no longer offer sacrifices, but we offer ourselves to God. Mm. And I think this is something that the ancient prophets emphasized a lot, because people tended to dissociate worship from everyday life.
Yeah.
They were not willing to translate the principles of worship in their union with God, you know, in their everyday dealings with one another. And that's where the prophetic proclamation was very strong and powerful. And here the Apostle Paul is using the same. Yes. So, you know, by presenting yourselves before God, that's an act of worship. And that is evident in the way in which we treat one another. And that's a very difficult thing to do and difficult lesson to learn, at least for myself. Mm-hmm. It's so much easier to do it theoretically, like we say, theology and so on, than in practical Christianity, you know.
That was a great observation.
Yeah, as a pastor, we used to say that, you know, the best part of the church is the people.
Yeah.
And the worst part of the church is the people. and I think it's true. We struggle with that because sometimes we think, you know what, life would be so much easier if it wasn't for the people around me. But in the reality, that's not really true, because wherever you go, there you are. And that's really where the issue comes down. And that's why, once again, you say, put it into action. This is where the rubber meets the road. And Paul here is very explicit. I mean, he tells us specifically, let love be genuine. Hate what's evil. I like the fact that he mentions love first, because if we start off with hating evil, you could really twist that into a wrong way of hating people. So once again, it's very, very balanced.
There's a very profound connection here, which is not just literary.
Mm-hmm.
In chapters 1 through 8, actually through 11, you see God's grace unfolded, which really is how God treats us.
Mm.
And here you get how we should therefore treat
other people,
one another. Fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
Theology without practice
is
empty.
Empty words.
Yeah.
Remember a story from Asia. I do not know if it really happened, but anyway, you know, the father as pastor and the family, after worship service, they come back home and they sit around the family table and they eat the meal. And the father says something, you know, and the son says, "Dad, but that's not what you preach from the pulpit today."
Mm.
And the father would say, "Yeah, but that was in the church. Now we are at home," and so on. So, you know, it's something that really touches deep into our hearts.
It may be a true story that never happened. You know, I think also, too, the fact that Paul can be so explicit here, let love be genuine, abhor what is evil. He can say what we should do, what we shouldn't do, which tells me, once again, it's not automatic.
No.
Because he explains it to us.
We have to be intentional about it.
But now here's the question. As adults, do we really need to be told what not to do?
Hmm.
I mean, we like to be told what we should do, but told not to do. That sometimes,
assuming we're not spiritual adults.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Sometimes we can be just like our just like kids, and we kind of chafe at that. But once again, important, because it's so easy for us to be misled.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to chapter 13. Our time is running out. Paul mentions, among other things here, the importance of local authorities in our relationship to them. Not always easy. Perhaps easier in countries where there is less injustice, less hardship in local governments. So does this command here vary on our location? How do we relate to this command about relating to local authorities?
I think it does vary. And here he presents authorities as those who fulfill their God-given duty of keeping order, mm-hmm. which
they
means justice.
Carry the sword, right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they keep justice. Mm-hmm. They protect the weak from the strong, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Revelation 13, you've got a different picture. The authority is robbing people of their spiritual mm-hmm. rights, their religious rights. It's forcing religion on them by governmental force, mm-hmm. and it becomes the beast.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the Roman authority is keeping law. Therefore, we should it's fulfilling its God-given function. Therefore, we should pay tax. We should, cooperate and give mm-hmm. respect. I don't know. That's how mm-hmm. I—
When we think of the time when he lived, there were Roman emperors like Nero.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
madmen.
These yeah. words were really challenging for the believers to read in those
yes.
days.
Yes.
And Paul carefully uses the word submit to governing yeah. authority. He doesn't say love.
No.
He uses
right.
before
yeah.
this paragraph and after this paragraph.
Yes. Yes.
But for the authorities, he uses the term submit.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. He doesn't say love the authorities.
No.
There's a place where you can worship authorities.
First Peter goes a little bit further. He says, respect.
Well, it's true that in the end that Paul himself was persecuted. I mean, according to Christian tradition, he was beheaded
yeah.
by the Emperor
yeah.
Nero.
Mm-hmm. He was beaten.
Yeah, he was beaten.
Imprisoned.
So still an important place for government, I think.
Yeah. Yes.
So does this also prohibit Christians bearing arms?
Oh, my.
Any thoughts on that, gentlemen? A little question.
It was a nice to be a slave in the Roman Empire.
Why do you say that?
You couldn't be conscripted.
Ah. Yeah, very true.
Yeah, I do find it as a blessing to belong to a religious body that does not mandate what I should do in such a case, but that based on the principles that I find in the Bible, and when I'm convinced, I will proceed that
mm-hmm.
way.
Yeah,
you know.
And so,
that's
in a sense,
difficult
we
question.
It is a difficult question,
mm-hmm.
and I know people on both sides of the fence, mm-hmm. and I am thankful for those who choose to serve and help me respect my country for the good things that it
mm-hmm.
does do.
Mm-hmm.
And I can respect those who say, no, I don't want to bear arms.
Or I will serve my country in a different capacity.
Yes, yeah. right. Mm-hmm. No, and I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where, once again,
yeah.
we have a broad range here. And once again, looking for the Spirit's leading. Paul goes back once again, which is quite interesting here, at the end of chapter 13. He says, owe no one anything except to love each other, for the one who loves another has fulfilled the law.
Beautiful summary.
Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law.
He starts with love, he ends with love, and that's helpful for me too, because once again, it just shows how easy it is for us to forget that. And Paul reminds us time and time again, not only in Romans, in Corinthians, in his other letters, the importance of placing love and looking at people through the eyes of the cross rather than our own personal eyes. Well, gentlemen, this has been another good conversation. I want to thank you again for your insights and perspectives. You, Dr. Bruce Johansson and Dr. Stratko Stefanovic, and also for our technical assistant, Michael White, today. Please join us next week as we look at the last two chapters of Paul's letter to the Romans. For Good Word, I'm Carl Cosart.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.